You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara. You're going to love it. Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. Hope that you have had a great week. As we all know, because we were inundated with press this past week, Teresa Giudice got married in New Jersey this past weekend at an event space across the street from a street fair. I mean, August is the time to get married if you're a reality star because so many people in the entertainment industry go on vacation, so you will have optimum opportunity to get press. I received a tip about this top secret event. I mean, it was like, this is a top secret event. It was going to have Oprah level flowers. The details, so exquisite. The workers were forced to sign a non-disclosure agreement, but it doesn't seem to have been ironclad enough because I found out that there would be quote unquote exclusives with magazines and the secret seating chart for the celebrity guests. Although, as it turned out, the celebrities never seemed to arrive. It was filmed, apparently a special series by Bravo, another Teresa series of episodes, if you will. But this time, it was less about fraud and lawsuits. This time, it's going to be more about marrying someone who enjoys tanning and misogynistic self-help retreats. The guests were in large part friends from town and other housewives who unknowingly, it seems, agreed to appear in a Real Housewives Ultimate Girls Trip episode at a faux chateau and not Turks and Caicos, in the Jersey suburbs, and without a salary. She wore a tiara befitting a gypsy on TLC, and with enough hair extensions that she could accommodate at least three full Real Housewives franchises. Also, it didn't seem to occur to her that the same hairstyle worn in her first marriage to Joe Giudice. So, her daughters were bridesmaids, of course, and his sister was the officiant. Most of the people that were at this event were her chosen family, as she said, a term that she used to reference those that were not born in a small village in Italy or Bergen County. Those were the people that were in support of her marrying someone who clearly has a history of ex-girlfriends who want to punch him in the throat. Friends who've made peace with her union with a man who loves t-shirts and being on a reality TV show. So here's the deal. Melissa and Joe decided in the days before that they would not attend. Melissa, first of all, was never asked to be a bridesmaid. Again, I'll tell you right now, why would someone over 40 want to be a bridesmaid? But that's neither here nor there. Teresa had about 18 bridesmaids. One was Jennifer. She did not ask Melissa to be a bridesmaid. But what it seems really put her over the edge was that a rumor was planted by someone who wanted to be on the show. A rumor about Melissa and another man, which seems, first of all, highly unlikely, but it fuels a bonfire. Melissa's a terrible wife. She's a terrible sister-in-law. It's not really believable, this suggestion that Melissa is cheating on her husband, but it gives Teresa enough reason to get under her brother's skin. And that, my friends, is the reason for the foundation of Real Housewives of New Jersey. Teresa and Melissa are in-laws who despise one another. That's it. Everyone else is basically a houseplant in the corner hoping to be watered. So we can look forward to the future episodes of Teresa complaining about family loyalty while she takes advantage of someone who is clearly trying to get on the show, who's eager and green enough to drop a nuclear bomb. Listen, they didn't go to the wedding. I can't blame them. But I can also fully expect that Teresa and Louis will have a one-year vow reunion with exclusive photos for print, and Melissa and Joe will go to that party. Also this week, Serena Williams announced that she's going to retire after the US Open to try for another baby. If you've watched Being Serena on HBO, you watched as she navigated her career after a traumatic labor. And I'm never going to forget how she struggled giving up breastfeeding because her coach explained it was keeping on extra weight and slowing her down, which is totally going to pull on the heartstrings of anyone that has gone through breastfeeding in the early months of motherhood. I'm telling you, if you don't like sports, if you don't like tennis, you will love Being Serena. So I'm just hoping that the same camera crew and production team are filming now, because it's going to be really fascinating to see that experience as she retires. Did you watch Indian Matchmaking like I told you this week? It is such a great show to binge watch. So here's the background. Love marriages are frowned upon in India, but marriages that are arranged by the parents of the prospective bride and groom are hugely celebrated. There's this entire industry of experts. So I'm talking matchmakers, astrologers, palm readers, face readers, which by the way is genius. She brings the photo and he reads their face from the picture. Like, yeah, they have issues. They're fine, et cetera, et cetera. She's got priests, organizers to help you with this arrangement. Seema Taparia from Mumbai is tasked with helping several from season one complete their mission for arrangement. So at the top of each episode, arranged couples who've been married for over 20 years assure you of their happiness. They've turned this arrangement into a love affair. Do you remember contestants Nadia, Aparna? Well, Aparna is back. She's horrible as ever. She is completely illogical. She does not seem to be self-aware at all. Season two newbies include Akshay, Viral, Arshneel, and Chital. My favorite is Arshneel, who is a cardiologist based in Cleveland. He's so wonderful. You want him so badly to meet the right person. Seema does not believe that dating is a good thing. She thinks that love doesn't happen at first sight. And she expects the contestants, or cast members, if you will, to decide very quickly if they're going to go ahead with the person that she has suggested. And the great thing about this show is that you feel like a fly on the wall, watching and waiting to see if there is a connection, often exasperated by some of their expectations. Some of the cast members are late into their 30s, and they've gotten a litany of reasons why they haven't met someone and who they should meet. And it's just fascinating to watch. I can't suggest it more. I think that you will love it. This episode, I asked Raquel Gates, an associate professor of film at Columbia University, to be my guest. I thought, here we are, we're almost to the end of summer. And I feel like so many of us are, as I say, anthropologists. And we often think at times, I've watched so many of these different shows and consider myself a cultural anthropologist. What would it be like if I was a professor at a college? What would it be like? So I asked her to come on the show. She loves reality television just like we do, and she had the most interesting perspectives. When she was about to graduate with a BS in Foreign Service from Georgetown University, she realized what really interested her. She became interested in the idea of popular culture as a forum for serious cultural, political, and social critique, which I could not agree with her more. Senior year, she began taking humanities courses and realized her love for analysis of culture. She was applying for jobs at the NSA and the CIA when she pivoted. So an MA in humanities at the University of Chicago was followed by a PhD in screen cultures at Northwestern University. Her work appears in both scholarly and popular publications, some of which include the New York Times, the Los Angeles Review of Books, Film Quarterly, Television and New Media, as well as other journals and collections. She's a fantastic guest, and you're going to want to follow her on social media. Here we go with Dr. Raquel Gates. 2 years ago for my birthday, my friend Carlene got me the most perfect birthday gift, a Vuori jogger. Since then, it's become a staple in my wardrobe. To know me is to know I love Vuori joggers. And here's why I love it. The product is incredibly versatile. It can be used for just about any activity like running, training, swimming, yoga, but also awesome for lounging or weekend errands. You will love the way you look in all Vuori clothing. And ordering your new favorite items could not be easier. Their website will showcase all the great colors and for all of their soft and well-made clothes. And here's another reason I love it. Vuori is 100% offsetting their carbon footprint. They're also reducing and offsetting 100% of their plastic footprint from 2019 and beyond. And they are utilizing better sustainable materials for their products, empowering your best active life. And for men, know that my husband loves Vuori pants too. They're perfect for running and his go-to travel pant. Vuori is an investment in your happiness. And for my listeners, they are offering, get this, 20% off your first purchase. Get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/Kate. That's Vuori.com/Kate. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Go to Vuori.com/Kate and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way that you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, and they pass the savings on to us. So I just got a 100% organic cotton tiered maxi skirt in red and a chiffon pleated midi skirt in soft pink. Now I'm going to wear both of them with either a white scoop t-shirt or a black tank top. In fact, wait, should we all get the same outfit and meet for drinks? Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/KateCasey for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/KateCasey to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/KateCasey. This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. If you're looking for new style inspiration, Saks.com is the place to go. Saks.com is making it easy for me to shop for the spring with their selection of chic clothes and accessories. Right now, I'm looking at Saks.com so I can find my new going out vibe. I'm looking for a breezy Zimmerman dress for an evening cocktail party. And for my upcoming conference in Los Angeles, I'm looking at bright Chloe blazers because I'm pushing myself to wear more orange and pink. Saks.com will inspire you to shop for everything on your agenda. So find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com. Raquel Gates is an associate professor of film at Columbia University. She's the author of Double Negative, The Black Image in Popular Culture. Welcome.
It's such an honor to be here. So thank you for having me.
First of all, do you have the greatest job?
I love my job. I mean, this past semester, I taught my reality TV class, which is always a delight. I'm pretty good with it. I like what I do.
So my first question is about teaching those courses. Do you find that your students have a completely different view than the viewers of the shows? Given that you're watching the Twitter feeds as a show airs, do you find that your students have a completely different perspective than those that are viewing it and talking about it on social media?
Not necessarily. I mean, what I say as like a professor of film and TV studies is that I'm always trying to provide students with like the language, the context, and the historical framing. So I sort of, they already have their opinions. They usually already are sort of seeing the same things that the fans are seeing. And my students are fans. Like, I'm a fan. I approach this from a position of like, I teach shows that I love. I genuinely find these things interesting and fascinating. And so I'm always just trying to sort of put it into some kind of context. So if we're talking about like the Kardashians, for instance, I'll tie that into like America's long time obsession with like women and domesticity. And so where do we see that in the 50s? Where do we see that in other places? How do you kind of connect like a show like Punk'd to something like Candid Camera in the 60s? So that's how I view my role. It's a fun like journey to be on with the students.
First reality show that you remember watching?
The Real World.
Me too. Okay, what season?
The season one, New York. Yeah. Ugh,
so good.
Yeah.
Which reality star in all the years that you've been watching unscripted television, their life story resonates most with your own?
Oh my, their life story? Oh, that's tricky. I don't know. But I also think that the people whose life stories resonate with me, like, aren't ones that I'd be that interested in watching. I don't know whose life story resonates the most with me. That's a good question. I don't know. I've never thought about that. That's a great question though.
Which show was the first memory that you thought, this person has a life that's completely different than mine, but I relate to that in some way?
The cast of Jersey Shore, the whole cast of Jersey Shore, I would say, because it's weird. It's like, in some ways, their lives are not like mine, but in other ways, like, there were these points of intersection. Do you know what I mean? Like, so yeah. Some of the, like, being from, you know, kind of like working class or middle class backgrounds, that, like, resonates very, like, much with me. I'm obviously not Italian, but I remember there was this episode of Jersey Shore where, like, Ronnie and Sammy got into a fight because they were always fighting in that season, you know, someone calls the house and they're talking to the situation to, you know, and they're like, Ronnie's in a fight. And Mike is like, what? And what happened? Who started? And in the background, you see Pauly D just lacing up his sneakers. And like, that was the moment that, like, it touched me because it reminded me so much of kind of like where I come from and how I was raised, where like, if somebody's your friend and they're in trouble, you don't actually need to know who's right or wrong. You just, like, you lace up your sneakers and you go, like, you work out the details later. And that was a pretty big moment for me. Love and Hip Hop are also, like, mm-hmm. another show that tends to, like, touch me, even if I don't feel like I have a lot in common, like, at least on the surface, with the characters.
I felt that way about the Shaws of Sunset episode when they went to Turkey and they were standing on the border looking at Iran and just weeping for their relatives of the life experience that they had and how badly they wanted to feel connected to their culture, but the distance and the generational divide kept them from having that. I remember thinking, this is extraordinary TV, because if I'm feeling that, I know that somebody who never meets anyone from Iran must be feeling that too.
Right, right. For me, the moments that always kind of stick with me are the ones that touch on some kind of, like, deep, like, emotional sort of experience. And in the shows, it can be rendered in a really specific way, like in a culturally specific way, like the one you're just mentioning, but there's something that is also universal about it, you know? I think that, you know, especially the candid reality shows do that so well, because there's so much about family and friendship and these things that we can all kind of, you know, like, relate to.
How do you think television, in terms of reality TV, not necessarily documentaries or docuseries, but reality TV, has changed over the last year or so? What are you seeing more of, more than ever?
I mean, I think that we're in this moment that I always say started about 10 years ago, but I feel like has reached some kind of fever pitch right now, where everything is so meta and so like self-aware of itself. And so the show is now about the show. And I mean, like, something like Real Housewives Ultimate Girls Trip, like the second season of that is a perfect example, where so much of it is just like, what was it like filming the show? And, like, what was it like when you got fired? And, you know, blah, blah, blah. So that feels really unique to me. And I tell my students that I'm actually not sure, like, where we go from here, because at the point where the show is about the show, and at the point where I think the rise of social media means that the show is just one part of the show, because, you know, like, with my students and with fans, like, people watch the show, but they're always cross like referencing against, like, Instagram and Twitter, you know, and things like that. Like, well, they're beefing. I wonder if they're gonna, like, resolve this. Well, they're still not following each other on Twitter, so I guess not. I mean, so there's a way where the audience is so savvy, that I'm really curious to see, like, where reality TV goes now, because it, like, I don't know where it goes.
I almost feel like it can only exist in the way that we're used to watching these shows for a season or two, because they're compromised in the way that they look at life and the way they interact with the fans once they've had their show air and they've had a taste of that fame.
Yeah. But, you know, but the thing is, no, I agree with you. I mean, I think we're at this point where also the cast members are so self-aware. I mean, that's the criticism people have made of Real Housewives of Dubai, is that, which is, I really am, I'm enjoying Dubai a lot. But I've seen the criticism that the housewives are sort of like doing their impressions of what they think a housewife should do. And I think that when you get to a point where like there are blueprints, there weren't blueprints for a lot of these casts, especially if you're talking about the Real Housewives. There's always the risk now that they're kind of like doing a shtick. They're doing a character. Everybody's like coming on to like, you know, shill some kind of product. And so I agree with you that it feels like we can only do one or two seasons, but at the same time, that kind of, it destroys what the pleasure has been of like the world building, right? I mean, I'm thinking about the current season of like Real Housewives of Atlanta, where like, I just so want this fashion show to go well for Sheree. I so want it to work out because I have this
investment.
I have this investment that's been building for over a decade, you know? You don't get that if you only have a season or two. And then I think that what the characters bring is much more like sort of surface and like instantaneous drama, which is different than I think what's sort of built these longstanding fandoms.
In connection to fandoms, what about the cast members of different shows that create an entourage around themselves? How much does that complicate storytelling for the production teams that are trying to tell stories in unscripted when there are so many people that are surrounding cast members and compromising the way they look at the world?
I can't imagine how hard that must be for cast members. I mean, just thinking about, you have to kind of bring your authentic self. You have to represent yourself. I think particularly, and we've heard like Black casts say this too. Like they also have this whole like additional pressure of like the politics of representation that they don't want to come across as like so-called like negative stereotypes. But then you're also trying to like secure your place and like get a contract and make for good television. Especially when, unlike the Kardashians, you don't have any control over final edits and production. You have no idea what'll make it in and what won't make it in. I think that, you know, I think it's like the entourage thing, but I also think it's just kind of like the juggernaut that reality television has become. And also all of like the ancillary businesses like as well, because, you know, I remember, you know, there was, I think it was Melissa from the Real World New Orleans who said that, you know, when she was on that show, like how many of her, like years ago, that there, you couldn't like make a business off of that, you know, but, you know, maybe you got some club appearances or so, but like that wasn't even a thing back then, you know, and now you can really, like, I look at JWoww and Snooki, you know, like, I mean, they have just made entire careers and lives, you know, off of that show. And so I think there's a lot of pressure to be marketable. I think also like just sort of where we are generationally, there's a lot of sort of emphasis on like building a brand and creating content and things like that. And I think you see that kind of bleeding into reality television.
When you're teaching, are there certain shows or series that are standouts that you feel like changed the trajectory of television, reality and unscripted television?
I usually have a couple of shows that I'm like, like, this is the thing after which it aired, like nothing was the same. I mean, so like The Real World, because it kind of codifies a thing. I actually don't think like that The Real World is the first reality show. I mean, that's how people talk about it. But you have plenty of sort of other examples and things that were essentially doing the same things as reality TV without being called reality TV. But like, there's The Real World. I always kind of like obviously like The Hills is another like big one. For me, Mob Wives is like the show that aesthetically changes everything, because you kind of, it like marks that high point of that really like gorgeous cinematic looking like television production. You know, their opening theme was fantastic. And so I always kind of like say like, this kind of marks, you know, sort of a new era, of television as well. Survivor, is another big one.
How do you think Keeping Up with the Kardashians or / Kardashians on Hulu has changed the way that we look at women?
Okay. So what I think is really fascinating about Keeping Up with the Kardashians, because it's I have to say also, it's like a, like parentheses, I never really thought that the new one could really feel that different, but it feels really different.
It does.
Which is like a pretty amazing feat. So for me, Keeping Up with the Kardashians is kind of continuing this legacy of sort of like, let's get a window into like women's lives. I think there's examples of that, like, you know, with stuff from the 50s. But there's a way that because it's a show focused on women and women in a family, you get lots of different types of sort of like specifically like feminine issues and problems being sort of articulated in lots of different voices. What I think is interesting about the Kardashians is it also, you know, in some ways, like the things that happen on there and the characters align really nicely with preconceived like social notions of like how gender works and stuff, you know, and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But it's also one of the few shows where like the women get final say in how things are sort of edited and presented. And I think that show, the new one, I think in particular, does a really good job of creating empathy with characters. I mean, like, I think it's really fascinating to see when they kind of shift from the really like super glossy kind of aesthetic to the more like we're peeking in the windows of the gym as Kim is on the phone, you know, trying to talk to Chloe, right? And like mm-hmm. thinking about what that, it brings us in, it creates empathy. It gives us this sense that we're actually spying on like the real and therefore it lends a lot of credibility to their stories and their narratives. And so I think that it's, you know, it's always hard to say how things impact people's views. And as a media studies scholar, I try to shy away from that because I think that's a hard thing to know. But what I do think is that I'm always interested in how reality television raises questions. And I think especially the stuff around Kim, like when she was like the whole story arc, when she was going to marry Chris Humphries and like whether she was going to take his last name or not. And like thinking about the branding. I mean, I just thought, however one felt about it or whether they were convinced of, you know, of her reasoning or his reasoning, that it was really powerful to see that conversation being mm-hmm. played out in the detail that it was, which I don't think you get that in other places. In a sitcom, that would have been resolved within 30 minutes, you know? But the fact that it was this ongoing tension, I thought was pretty significant.
And the issue of, did I make a mistake and should I still walk away even though it's so new? Yeah. I think a lot of people, including myself, I remember being in a relationship the same where you think everyone is expecting us to stay together, but I don't feel good about this. So there have been a lot of, I think, really interesting dynamics to that show that must make for great conversations in your classrooms.
Yeah. I mean, it's what's been kind of great is that there's lots of episodes of things I can show that is crazy. Like my students were like, some of them were born in like 2000, which like kind of blows my mind. You know, you show like the real world, the first season, they're like, when was this? 92? Like I wasn't born yet. So many of the topics that come up are still resonant. Like, I mean, a lot of the racial dynamics from the first season of The Real World, like we talk about that in class a lot. It's just as relevant now as it was in 92. A lot of the stuff around gender the Kardashians was great, especially this semester, because there was so much Kim and Kanye drama like this past spring. So I always try to calibrate the class as well to what's happening like in the real world at the time that I'm teaching it. And so like Kim and Kanye was this constant kind of like backdrop of the class. Not that I had planned it that way, but it kind of happened. So it was interesting to like go back into the first season's of that show to look at like how is this show and the Kardashian women in particular trying to kind of address questions of like being a woman and dealing with these kind of like social pressures to be a certain type of way in a relationship, but then also like have a business and, you know, and mm-hmm. and run companies, and how do you sort of deal with those tensions that they're the Kardashians, so they're always a little like extreme, but then on the other hand, they're also very relatable.
Common dynamics. Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes that you like, so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, and even on the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
So for you, when they have the real world homecoming, is that like a gift that keeps on giving? Because you're showing the 1992 real world and you're talking about Kevin and Julie in a very important racial moment. And then you get to see them unravel it 25 years later.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's like a gift and a curse on the, because on the one hand, it's like all of that stuff was happening the semester that I was teaching it. And I was, but I didn't know all of that stuff was going to be airing. And so it was, you know, it was me quickly trying to scramble to incorporate things and figure out how to get students access and what we can watch, and what we can't watch, you know, those types of logistical issues. But yeah, it's a gift, one, because it also shows it like continues the conversation past 1992, and again brings it into the current moment. But then it's also tricky because, you know, I also like for my students to kind of sit in whatever that moment was in the past that we're watching. And one of the things I think that can be interesting about seeing cast members do this kind of retrospective stuff is it can be really enlightening, but they've also had a long time to kind of like wrap their head around how they want to present themselves now. And you know, and sometimes, you know, students want to take all of that at face value, you know,
interesting.
So it's complicated, but it's, but look, I'm not mad that Paramount Plus has seen fit to kind of reboot all of these things and give me endless material to work with in class.
Undoubtedly. Now, you and I both agree that we think that this season of Real Housewives of Atlanta is doing something that other Housewives franchises have struggled to do, and that is to really portray the complexities in parenting. Can you walk us through your feeling about that? Because you have written a fantastic book. It's called Double Negative, The Black Image and Popular Culture. I agree with you. I think that the women on that show are much more willing to be vulnerable and to show the very difficult parts of parenting in different ways. You see Candy and Todd talking about parenting older women, girls that, you know, are in college, and the complexities of parenting a stepchild. You see Sonia and her husband debating more children. You see Marlo and the complexities of taking in nephews and foster care.
What I think is pretty fantastic about this season, and I think Real Housewives of Atlanta, I mean, I can't remember if you said about this season or the show in general, but I mean, like, Real Housewives of Atlanta has always done, I think, a really fantastic job of kind of elucidating the complexities of motherhood, and specifically of Black motherhood, you know, and the social pressures and the gender pressures and, you know, all of these things. What's so fascinating to me about this season is it's like showing parenting like in like its ugliness too. I mean, like I'm really fascinated with Marlo in her storyline. Because I don't, you know, like I don't find her actions to be sympathetic. Like, I mean, I just, you know, I kind of watch it and I'm like, oh, those boys are going to have to, like, there will be a lot of therapy for like this constant abandonment. But then at the same time, I think there's something incredibly sympathetic about watching Marlo basically like struggle with how to become a parent. One, because she hasn't really had it hasn't been modeled for her in the healthiest of ways. But then two, she hasn't had the benefit of like, you know, a decade or 15 years of getting acclimated to being a parent. I mean, I don't know what it would be like to have teenagers dropped in my lap, having never done any kind of like serious, like child raising before. I mean, I know in the show, she talks about having taken in her cousin, but being the sole person responsible for these two young men as teenagers, who I'm sure already are coming in, you know, with some other issues from, you know, their respective family situation. That's really hard. And I find that there's something for me that's really powerful about seeing her like kind of fail at some things, mm-hmm. but then also learn from it, you know, and kind of, you know, come to grips as well with the things she's doing that are kind of problematic holdovers from what her mother did to her. It's really interesting to see, I think, like her and Kenya go at it over this particular issue, because they both are just, at least as a viewer, it's seemingly bringing in a lot of their, you know, their backgrounds into this mm-hmm. fight, and doing a lot of kind of like projection. And so it's really fascinating to me. I think that historically in television, you know, mothers they're just tropes. It's like, you're either like, you know, you're either like the perfect mother, you know, you're either like Donna Reed, right? Or you're like a horrible stereotypical cartoon, like mother-in-law, you know, like from some other sitcom. But there's not a lot of gray area, and there's not a lot of room for people who have the desire to love somebody, but don't know how to love somebody, which is what I sort of read in Marlo this season. I mean, there's also this way that like on Atlanta, they talk about parenting. I mean, they're, you know what I mean? Like the other ones, they show parenting, but they don't, you don't see conversations like the one that happened in the car this season, where they were on their way up to the mountain retreat, you know, before Marlo like canceled the whole thing. But where they were all talking about, oh yeah, like, well, you know, my parents took in my cousin, and like, oh yeah, then I had my, you know, whoever come live with us. And you know, there's a comment, I can't remember which cast member said about Marlo, like, well, she doesn't have an experience in this, right? I mean, they're literally talking about the labor of mothering, which is a thing that the other franchises, they don't really do, you know? Mm-hmm. And I find that to be just really significant. And I think the show has always done that. I mean, in my book, I talk about like the reunion show where Kim Zolciak, you know, kind of bailed on the cast trip because she was pregnant and, I don't, you know, whatever, like she didn't want to go, but like, you know, she bails because she says like, she didn't know when she's going to labor, something. And, you know, and Phaedra talks about like giving birth on camera. You know, she talks about the show as work. She talks about it as part of her work, in addition to like being a mother. And, you know, so the show has always kind of done those things, even going back to like, you know, first season Real Housewives of Atlanta and Nene getting Brett ready for college, you know, and, you know, and that was sort of more just kind of fun, entertaining type of stuff. But you see, I think like the labor of mothering a lot on the Real Housewives of Atlanta. The stuff that makes, at least for me, like people think it's about the fights. It's not about the fights. People don't tune in to watch fights season after season after season. Like you have to have some kind of human connection in order to like invest in these characters for like a decade. That's, you know, that's what I would argue. The stuff that makes it the most compelling, the human stuff, that wouldn't ever make for good scripted television. Like the conversation between Candy and Todd about like, do we put the money in a trust? Like, do we give it out like annually, or do we give the kids one lump sum because I'm worried they won't manage their money and they'll make bad. Like that would be the most boring, you know, like TV show ever. But it's because like I think as viewers, like we have certain expectations from like a sitcom. We're like, well, what's the punchline? There's no joke coming. It's not resolved, right? If we're watching a drama, we're like, so he's going to kick her out on the street. Is that what's happening? Like, we want like the kind of melodrama of it. But reality television, because it's so much about the, like the everyday, the regular, the stuff that's, you know, deemed kind of like not good television. I think that's what allows those conversations to take place, which are the ones that ultimately, you know, connect with us. But then also, I mean, what I thought was powerful about that moment is that that's also like, I mean, not intentionally, but who, I don't care about intentionality. That's also a critique of like traditional models of fatherhood, because like the traditional model of fatherhood is that like, that's what a dad does. Like, he's not supposed to be affectionate. He's like, he pays the bills, you know, and he makes sure that the lights are kept on, and like, and that's his job. I keep a roof over your head and food on the table, right? That's like traditional like ideas of what it means to be a good father. So the fact that you get this scene where Kayla's like, this is not good enough. This is not enough. And that the weight, the emotional weight is like behind her saying that, that's low key pushing for a different model of masculinity, a different model of fatherhood. And you're absolutely right. That the balance in that scene is that we don't view Todd as a monster. You know, I watched and was like, oh, he doesn't have this to give right now. He doesn't know how to do this thing. Like, I fully think that this is part of his journey, you know, and his journey with Candy, but there's something really like powerful about that moment, you know?
Agreed. Who in reality TV right now in the Bravo space, because I would be too hard to just broaden out that way. Right. Who do you think is the most overlooked cast member who brings the most to the screen, who doesn't get the attention or respect or accolades they deserve?
Oh, Karen Huger, Real Housewives of Potomac. When I watch Karen, I just think she brings so much. She's not like I don't find her to be a flashy housewife. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's always like this subtext behind things that she says. Like there's, you know, I mean, I remember there's an episode not from this past, maybe two seasons ago, where her daughter Raven is going off to college, and Karen is having this conversation with her. You go off to college, but she's talking about what you do if you're in a situation where a guy is like pressuring you to have sex and you don't want to. And there's so much like pain in Karen's voice and urgency it's just really clear that she has experienced something that she's not going to make do you know what I'm saying? Like in that moment, this is not going to be the storyline of the show, but it's there and it's present. Like she's always, I find that there's always an allusion to something with Karen. There's always sort of this vulnerability that you can kind of glimpse that then she, you know, that she doesn't sort of allow to be front and center with her. I mean, I just think she's such an interesting, fascinating housewife who has her loyalties and is sensitive, you know, kind of understands how the show works, but also has this whole life, you know, like before the show and outside of the show, that it seems that she also is very intent on protecting as well. So that's who I would say.
You have written this book that everybody can get. It's called Double Negative, The Black Image in Popular Culture. Do you have time and are you working on another book?
Yeah, I am. Okay. So that's the grind in academia, that you're always writing something. I am. So the next book, which is under contract with Duke University Press, who published the first book, the next book is tentatively titled, because this will change, Hollywood Style and the Invention of Blackness. And that is all about like classic Hollywood, but also thinking about kind of like the conventions of classic Hollywood and how those resonate with contemporary discourses about race. So like there's a section from that book that I published as a short article on CNN.com, which was about the Marilyn Monroe, Kim Kardashian like dress scandal. So like as an example of some of the stuff that'll be in the new book.
Oh, perfect. Where can they find your book?
So Double Negative, you can get it at DukeUniversityPress.com. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold, you can buy it.
And where can they follow you on social media?
So it's at Raquel Gates, RaquelGates, like Bill, I wish. And that's on Instagram, Twitter.
The amazing Kate Casey.
I want to thank my great guest, Raquel Gates, and remind you to click subscribe, leave a 5-star review, and join the Facebook group Reality Life with Kate Casey. Sign up for my must-watch list at katecasey.substack.com. You will get my list every week on what not to miss this week, what you should be watching every week, and you don't want to miss it because you don't want to be left behind in these conversations when you go to parties, you're talking at the office, you're texting with friends. You're going to miss something and you're going to be lost because it's what everybody's going to be talking about that week. What is going on in streaming and cable television? You can find me on Instagram at @KateCaseyCA. I am always posting what I'm watching this week, and you don't want to miss out on that. You can also follow me on TikTok at It's Kate Casey. You can follow me on Twitter at @KateCasey. I tweet about shows and during shows all week long. You can find me on Cameo at Kate Casey. And finally, make sure that you check out my Patreon, patreon.com/KateCasey, for more bonus episodes. Thank you so much for hanging out with me, and I look forward to circling back with you next week.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.